Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
Hello, how are you this morning, Mitchell?
I'm pretty good.
That's good.
Pretty good. I've had a good weekend, a very good weekend.
Out with the boys this weekend.
I was away mountain biking in a place called Lingalonga.
And you've got the bruises and stuff to show for it, haven't you?
I've got the bruises and scars to show for it. I'm in a bit of pain. That's okay. I think I'm when it comes to pain, I'm a little bit of a pussy.
Yes, a little bit.
Just how it is. I like to milk it.
Oh, well.
So we're here with Dave, Dr. Dave.
Hi, Dr. Dave. So great to have you on and joining us here with Dorothy and the Dealer. How are you going?
Hi there, guys. Wonderful to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to come on.
Oh, our pleasure. I'm really looking forward to talking to you. I know your internet's cutting in and out a bit, but we're going to do the best we can and see how it pans out.
You may sound a bit robotic every now and then, but some people find that sexy, Dave. They find it sexy.
Oh, dear.
There's something for everyone.
So you know how we start off our podcast, Dave. I can't wait to get stuck into actually what we're going to be talking about today. But our podcast start off with a song. So what song are you singing or is your favourite song that you would like to share and see if Mitch knows it or I know it?
Sure. So at the moment I'm really enjoying the song Lovely Day by Bill Withers.
When I wake up in the morning, sunlight hits my eyes, just one look at you, woo, and I know it's going to be. That's a lovely day.
That's the one.
Okay. I love that song. It does remind me of summertime. It reminds me of summertime because I think it came out around about the same time as that song. In the summertime when the weather is
cold.
Remember that?
Absolutely.
Touch the sky. So that came around. I think that was late 70s, actually. I think I could be wrong, but I think.
Yeah, 60s or 70s. Early days.
Great summer song. So how are you going?
I know the song, but I haven't. I wouldn't know it to sing it, so
yeah. Oh, Lovely Day. Lovely Day is a fantastic song.
Did a great
Lovely
job.
Lovely Day is a great song. So I hear you got a new bike. You were sending me some pictures there the other day, Dave. Oh,
I have, yeah.
Have you got it yet?
Absolutely. So I've just invested in a mountain bike so I can go out in the hills and enjoy some of that serenity.
Oh my goodness, buddy. Have you got everybody into mountain biking?
Yes, I have. Dave's come out. He's done a little
Mitch
bit.
Was definitely an influence for me as far as getting my backside moving on the bike.
I had young George Lure out there with us on the weekend, and I only introduced George about 4 months ago, and my God, you'd want to see some of the stuff he was doing at Lingalonga. Like just crazy jumps. It was great. It's cool. Really exciting. So what are we going to talk about?
First up, let's just intro Dave in the sense that, like, how long have we known you, Dave? When did we meet you?
Must be about 3 years, I would say, now.
I feel like I'm losing track of time, actually, quite a bit, because I would have said it was probably longer, but I don't know. You're right.
It could be 4 years, maybe 2019-ish.
Okay.
And do you remember how you heard about us?
I did, yeah. I actually saw a video that was on YouTube of yourself, Mitch, talking about the relationship with your father, and I was going through some stuff at the time, and I just connected with it and you on a level, and I actually just wept for 20 minutes listening to your story, but also the way that it resonated with me was scary.
Yeah.
A lot of people find that about your story.
Yeah,
it's
a pretty cool
really
story, yeah.
Resonate it's, quite a bit with it, you know?
Yeah, I can't tell that story a lot of the time without weeping myself because it's just such a magic story, you know? I just love telling it. It's great. It's cool. Yeah. It really has influenced people. It's really been of service throughout my whole life. It's great.
I think if something can move another like that without having known you, met you, didn't know anything about you, but I could feel the raw emotion in it and that connected with my raw emotion.
Yeah.
It was quite amazing.
That's cool.
And so what was the thing that I suppose you ended up wanting to come and work on, or what is the thing that you ended up like what attracted you to come in and actually do some work on yourself, Dave? Like in terms of you know, the personal development world. What were you looking for?
I ended up in a crisis, and I knew that there was so much magnificence and wonder within me, which I wasn't expressing. And I knew there was a whole lot more to me, wanted to get that out, and didn't really know what the avenue was for that. And yeah, you guys offered something that allowed me to connect with that, among other tools that and things that I used, but that was enormous. Going in and looking at the subconscious drivers and evaluating, you know, things that I'd suppressed and had my shadow, things that I'd avoided for a long time.
Yeah.
Opening that up, Pandora's box, if you like, and learning from it. That's
Yeah. I think that so many people out there have stuff that's just there and they can see it's there and they just don't know what avenue to take to be able to actually get in, knuckle down and sort it out. Do you know what I mean? And I think that that's a good description there, is that some you know it's there, but it's just what avenue do you take?
I think a lot of times people think that opening up Pandora's box, you know, they don't realize that it's actually full of magic and wonderment, and it's full of, you know, really, really it's really there to actually enable you. Do you know what I mean? What went on is there to enable you. They think to go there is bad. I've got to look at how things were bad, and I've got, and it's actually not. No. That's where all your gems lie there. Yeah. You know, all your magic and your potency and your power lies in your ability to look at what shaped you and who you are. And so I think that's just part of the trip. You know, it's part of the journey.
I forget who says it, but there's a magnificent quote that says, "In the cave you fear to enter lies the treasure that you seek."
Oh, nice.
And it summarizes exactly what you're saying. Some people really see that as a painful journey, or that it's going to be full of anguish, but that's where the magic is. That's, you know, people wouldn't do it if it didn't harbor such glory and potential for change, for growth.
Mm. I think I might trademark that one myself. As soon as you don't
even
know
though somebody else totally said it.
Oh, we found out.
So what happened then? Like, what was your realization? How did life shift, or what shifted for you? You know, once you were able to like work on that stuff.
Well, for me, it's been a dramatic shift in worldview, not simply. You know, I did a lot of work on the relationship that I had with my father and sort of subconscious programming and things from my childhood, but through the work that you guys offer, but also through a journey of self-exploration with many different tools and many facets, created an enormous shift in worldview where I realized that it's not what happens to you, it's how you look at life and its perception, and you really hold the keys to the castle within you, and you just need to fall in love with that journey of exploration of self. And I suppose for me, it pushed me into a trajectory of following my sort of North Star. Right. It gave me, when my feet hit the floor, I know where I'm going. It's given me a direction, which is something that I, you know, battled with for a long time, despite sort of what I've managed to do with my life so far. I was very, very lost.
Yeah.
Mm. Now I have a very dynamic and I know a lot more about myself and the direction that I want to take life.
Mm. Mm. I really like
that. And my power to do that, you know, the confidence and the self-esteem to be like, it lies with me and nobody else. And anyone can do it.
You know, I think that I know that when we get into talking about why you're here and what you're about, Dave, we're going to get into that in terms of our own personal power. But I think that that's super important. And I think having that realization that you have the power within to be the master of your own life, be the master of your future, your destiny, is so important. And we can let everything that happened bog us down, or we can use everything that happened to drive us forward. And when we're in that limbo point, we're achieving things and we're getting ahead, but it's like we're being pulled back because of our subconscious, you know, thought patterns that, I don't know, that we can't do this, or we're not enough, or, you know, this stuff that happened with Dad has you thinking that, you know, you're, I don't know, you can't achieve or whatever. And then as soon as you sort that out, it's like everything shifts and you're able to say, oh, actually the power's in me. It's been in me the whole time. It's been in me the whole time, you know. And well, I think
I think in some way people don't understand how life and how, you know, that when you have, you perceive negative things happen to you, you don't understand, and you don't understand how that mechanism works, that it's actually both sides. Mm-hmm. You know, we're in this singular, you know, dualistic reality, experiencing things centrally as a singularity. And so you have something bad happen. You don't realize what it's about. I think when you begin the personal journey, you understand what Pandora's box is. And now you understand the mechanism of how it works. And you're like, ah, fuck. Okay, I get it. Right now. Oh, my God. I feel so humble because I could have fucking not known that for the whole of my life. And I'd have just made an arse of things, or thought I was making an arse of things. But in actual fact, things are meant to be beautiful and mystical and amazing. And life, you know, and that's not airy-fairy. You know, that's not, you know, magic. You know, that's reality. That's a system. Life has a system. Psychology has a system. Our personal development has a system, and the system works, and it's proven through time, you know.
Mm-hmm. You're describing the sort of laws of the universe that bring this into creation. Mm-hmm. And it's so fundamental for me. It's framed the way that I look at every moment to moment when something occurs, rather than saying, oh, poor me, or this has happened like this. Mm. I step back and I look at it and I say, what is this really about?
Yeah.
I can run a story, I can see it one way, but what's it really about? What's the bigger picture?
Yeah.
And just to touch on what you said, Mills, it's about the person going through the journey, but also it's the way that we react with others. So in a way, the story that I had been telling myself had also been punishing my father unknowingly. Mm-hmm. So I'd set up a story and I was running it, and I was very happy to keep running it. And I didn't realize that the way that I am and the way I was colliding with others, not just my father, but mm-hmm. I was holding them to something that was not fair to them. Mm-hmm. So it moves mountains.
Yeah.
Basically.
100%. Yeah. So tell us, Dave, what do you do? What exactly, what do you do?
So I work as a GP in Perth. Mm-hmm. And probably more fundamentally is I practice as what I call a quantum doctor.
So what does that mean?
So I can expand on that if you like.
Yes, please do.
So being a quantum doctor, perhaps I should say quantum healer, but it's a way of looking at the world and a way of practicing within, I'll say, health rather than medicine. So it's about looking at the bigger picture, the person in front of you, but also where they fit in the context of their life, their social structure, mm-hmm. where they're at mentally and spiritually. A big part of it is looking at or understanding on some level universal laws and understanding a bit about quantum physics and trying to bring that into an application within healing. Mm-hmm. I suppose in many ways it deviates from a strict materialist view of the sciences and medicine. What else?
So can you give us an example maybe of what you mean by bringing the universal laws in? What does that mean? Can you give us an example of it?
I suppose somebody comes to see you with an ailment, and rather than zooming right in and getting sort of stuck in there's always, you know, minute details, and that can be important, but it's very important to zoom out and to frame their issue in the greater context of their life. So people will come with many, often consciously, often subconsciously, ailments that they think is related to X. And if you zoom out a little bit, you can rush in and you can say, oh, it's foot pain and it's because of this and that's how we're going to treat it. Or you can zoom out and say, what does this mean? Why has this happened? What's the meaning of this? Mm-hmm. What dynamic in that person's life set this up? And you could look and say, oh, look, it's obvious he just rolled his ankle, but why did he roll his ankle? What was happening at a greater level? Mm-hmm. What's happening in that spiritual, mental, emotional life of that person to set that up. And then what is that experience like? We can look at it and say, it's a sprained ankle, this is the treatment, go away. Or we can look at how the person frames that, and there's always a lesson in illness, and it's very easy to ignore that, as a lot of conventional, let's say conventional doctors do, and just say it's simply this. But looking at the experience for the individual.
Right.
So you're just talking about the injury is really the, so the, how, do you feel that Western medicine treats things Western medicine treats things like cause and effect?
I think you said medicine. Did I medicine? Western medicine.
Western medicine treats things like cause and effect. Here's the effect, and you know, ignore the cause, or here's the effect, pay attention to the cause, or here's the effect, just medicate it and move on.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, without getting into a, there's a lot of amazing things within Western medicine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 100%.
And there's a lot of stuff which is totally lacking and inadequate, which sort of explains a lot of my journey and sort of why I am where I am, was because I could see a lot of the inadequacies. I don't deny the magic and the amazing technological advancements and some of the therapeutics that are offered within conventional or traditional medicine. But there's a whole world beyond that, that healers, healing modalities where people are looking at getting to that root cause, or not just simply covering up symptoms or treating something superficially, but looking what that means deeper, and again, what set that up, what's happening to create that.
Because if you're just treating the superficial, the person just has that repeated problem. Is that what you notice, that the problem repeats itself? Because you're just touching on the surface. You're not actually going into what's actually going on.
Absolutely. And that's actually a really good example. Let's say a person comes into the clinic and they're having repeated infections, whether that be upper respiratory, you know, colds, or whether they're getting urine infections, cold sores, mouth ulcers. You could sit there and say, see them for each of these things a week apart and say, okay, it's a urine infection. A week later, it's a cold. A week later, it's mouth ulcers. And just, you know, give each treatment for that. Or you could zoom out and say, this person is having this experience because they are so stressed. This person's immune system is completely run down because on a weekend they're binge drinking and they're getting inadequate sleep, and they're emotionally in a, you know, unhealthy relationship that's causing them to run a chronic daily stress. So there's always a lot more going on than, it's a bit like the iceberg analogy. You can see the tip, and if you want to just work with the tip, then you're not, that's all you're going to get. Yeah. But if you decide that you want to dig down and see what's going on a deeper level, there's always a lot more therapeutic available there.
It's a hard one to tackle this question, but how do you feel like there's more of you out there in your field? And do you feel that part of Western medicine is starting to grow and that's why it's getting pushback? I mean, if we look, I know for me, for example, you know, I've looked at ways of, you know, I'm always looking at ways to be able to deal with stuff. You know, how do I become better? How do I understand me better? How do I connect with me better? So, you know, I've done things like hallucinogenics, ayahuasca, stuff like that. And it seems that now is becoming a very big global movement. And, you know, Western medicine is starting to, in some cases, embrace it. You know, there's lots of research coming out of the US, California, at the moment, where they're starting to really embrace it. Australia's always about 5 years behind the US with that sort of stuff. But do you feel lonely out there as a doctor that thinks about it like this? Or do you feel like, no, fuck, there's actually quite a few of us. You know, there's a bit of a movement. People are starting to really go, look, we have to be able to look at the cause and not just the effect.
I suppose the answer is both. on a international scale or zooming out, there's many dedicated people that are looking into the most incredible healing modalities, people with broad open minds that can embrace both sides. There's people, what I'm doing is nothing new. There's people that have been pioneering this for a long time. There's people that are amazing advocates for, you know, nutrition, microbiome, stress management, all kinds of, you know, plant medicines, all of these sort of wonderful healing modalities. At a local level, it's lonely. You know, there are, the system that I've come from educates people one way.
Yeah.
And the people that I am around based on my sort of current occupation are people that have been given that style of education.
So through your education as a doctor, how much time would you have spent on nutrition being educated as a doctor?
Yeah, not much at all, Mitch. It's very poor. It's been a while. It's probably 15 years since I was sort of in the medical school level.
Yep.
But I'd say I probably took two lectures, if I was lucky, on nutrition.
Right.
I know that things are probably changing, and I did speak to someone recently, a young sort of medical trainee that was at one of the universities, and he was telling me that at least self-care at the level of the institution within a medical degree was starting to be taught, which brings me to a really good point, because the whole reason that I ended up on my great journey was I ended up burnt out and, you know, fallen out of the system because I didn't know how to care for myself while trying to care for others, which is a really common plight for junior doctors who, you know, all over the place, whether it's Ireland, it's terrible, or, you know, different parts of the world. But had I been taught more about self-care at the university level, that is how to manage my stress, how to manage my nutrition, how to care for somebody and care for myself, it would have given me an amazing grounding to be able to care for others. Now, I would say the two are mutually inseparable. The only way I've learned to care for others in my role is through doing it for myself. So there's not a thing that I don't advocate to people that come to my office every day that I don't practice myself.
Right.
I don't have to sit there and cast some illusion. If people want to talk about meditation or breath work or nutrition or, you know, cold water immersion, you know, anything, it's stuff that I'm doing on a daily basis that I've committed my life to. If you're not doing that, what are you teaching? How are you advocating that others live their lives, or, you know, strategies to adopt to manage the sort of lifestyle that we live now? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So can I just ask, can you speak to maybe anything else in the education that you feel could, like, is lacking in any way? Is there anything else that you can allude us to? Self-care is a big one. Is there anything else that you feel might be, I don't know, that is not, it's not as it could be?
Well, I suppose we've already touched on nutrition, but that's absolutely fundamental. If you are not educating people about what they're putting in their mouth and that being directly correlated to health across so many facets of health, whether that be, you know, obesity, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, high blood pressure, all of these things that we can call lifestyle diseases, which are not genetic in origin, but are purely a manifestation of a poor diet, stressful life, you know, some element of genes in there. But
I suppose also, you talk about things like stress and stuff like that, does that get touched on? Do you think other people are working with that element, or is it just someone like you who would do that, who would touch on that holistic approach?
I think for the people that know and are doing it are probably amazing at it. There must be people all over the world that are treating stress as the silent killer that it is, at least within standard medicine. I would say it's still people are aware of it, but I think it still gets swept under the rug a little bit. It's kind of like the elephant in the room. It's poorly understood, poorly defined. What is stress? Oh, it's, you know, having the kids screaming when I want to do X, Y, Z, or it's so different for different people. Mm-hmm. But there's no getting around the fact that it has a very profound impact on health day to day and chronically. So,
I was going to say, are you finding that you're attracting people who are interested in that holistic approach, or are you attracting people who are pushing back against that with you personally in your practice?
Personally, within my practice, I'm finding people are seeking me out. People are coming because they like what I'm putting out. They're finding a level of balance within my practice. So I suppose the important thing to say there is I like to use the best of the West and fuse it with alternative and complementary medicines. You know, spirituality and the mind are a big passion of mine and certainly inseparable as far as thinking about health. I think for the most part, a lot of people probably have the idea that health is what's happening in your physical body. It's the level of, you know, organs and tissues, but separating the mind and the spirit from health is like trying to cut a magnet in half and give someone a one-sided, you know, a one-sided coin or something. They can't be separated. So, I think when looking at somebody, I like to see where somebody is at in the stage of their consciousness. And if they come in and they say, look, I've got this rash on my leg. That's all I'm worried about. It's because this has happened. I treat within the level of what that person is open to receive. And if it's antibiotics, it's antibiotics. If somebody has a much broader worldview and has a greater sphere of consciousness and says, I'm having a lot going on at the moment, or we'll take it slightly differently. But, you know, ultimately I see my role as being a guide to help people. Autonomy is enormous for me. I want to create a world where people are their own. They're in the driver's seat of their own health. They look after themselves. They have the knowledge. They do their own research. They're educated. They come in and they say, this is the problem. I think it's this. What do you think? I'd like to treat it like this. I'm not willing to accept this. This is how I'd like to do it. That's, to me, that's an empowered, autonomous being making their own health decisions, using somebody else with knowledge as a guide.
I really love that. Like, I really love that. I think I feel like that's really empowering for an individual. It says that it doesn't diminish your role either, because I think that some people can, you know, even especially in our industry, some people can really poo-poo the whole medical industry, but there's a purpose and a reason for everything in our lives. And that includes, the like you said, the best of the West. There's definitely parts of that that are important, right? But if we go in thinking that somebody else is going to fix us, well, that doesn't work. You know, we heal ourselves, and when we can take power and responsibility for that, then we can be the leaders in our own, well, we can drive our own, you know, health that in a whole way with the expertise and the knowledge that someone like you, Dave, has in the medical field. I think that's awesome.
Well, I think as well that, you know, we're getting to a point now where we're having to realize that a pill is not going to fix you. Do you know what I mean? It's all of it. You have to be involved in your own healing. And, like, I mean, it's been an interesting 2 years, especially in your field, Dave. And, I mean, we hear a lot about, like, we hear a lot about mental health issues, drug addiction, et cetera, et cetera. But what are you seeing? What is mainly, I mean, I know you've just gone into private practice yourself, but what is mainly, what did you see coming through the emergencies? What do you think now is the thing we need to watch out for? And what do you think people can do right now to start to make sure that they're you know, starting to take responsibility for their well-being, especially in the current climate of lockdowns, et cetera, et cetera?
So the one thing I'd just sort of close out what Mills was saying, the caveat to the fusion of Western and, let's say, more natural alternative is if you can live in harmony with nature, listen to your body, operate with an awareness of your breath, your body and space and time, you're less likely to need to use Western medicine. If you're following the laws of nature, which say you only need to eat one bowl, not four bowls of pasta, then you don't need the tablet. You know, the problem is that we're so out of balance as far as being as beings. We're out of balance spiritually, we're out of balance mentally and emotionally, and we're out of balance physically. Mm-hmm. And we want to live in this limitless way that we're undisciplined. We don't want to live in a way where we follow the laws of nature, respect that, and our body looks after us in turn. We want to abuse it, and then we want a quick fix, like what Mitch is referring to. We want a pill.
Yeah.
My first piece of advice would be stay away from quick fixes.
Like you just mentioned something there, we're going to come back to that question I said a minute ago, but you just mentioned something there, which, you know, when people hear discipline, right? And I think psychosomatically from a young age, we're taught that discipline is something when a kid gets a beating or when a kid gets reprimanded. But discipline is actually not that, you know. And, you know, it's like staying fit and staying well and going to the gym is fucking hard. Like staying disciplined is difficult. You know, it's not a fucking easy thing. It's difficult to get that discipline. And when you hear the word discipline, I think people think, oh, Jesus. But in actual fact, the pain that we put in has such a massive payoff. You know, and we try to avoid the pain of it. We think, okay, we're just going to overeat. We're going to be undisciplined. We're not going to take care. We're not going to sleep properly. We're going to watch things and listen to things that stress us out. And that all has a payoff, but so does discipline. Do you know what I mean? We think if we do those things, we just let ourselves go, we're going to avoid the pain. But we aren't. We're going to get the pain. We're just going to get it in another
way. That's right. So it's focused or dispersed. You're either going to get the benefit of just being able to eat whatever you want, smoke whatever you want, drink whatever you want, and then you have to deal with the pain of being sick and trying to get something that's going to fix it on the outside, or you have the pain of, you know, being disciplined.
A little bit of discipline.
And then, yeah, you don't need that as much.
There's two points there I want to raise. One is an analogy. If somebody's at, you know, Everest base camp and they're all packed in their gear and they're ready to go up the mountain, and then somebody pulls up in a helicopter and says, don't worry, you don't have to trek to base camp. I'm going to put you in my helicopter and I'm going to fly up. It's going to take 45 minutes. When you get to the peak and you hop out and you're looking over what is magnificence, the benefit and the wonder and the reward that you get in turn is not going to be the same.
Yeah.
As if you've slogged it out and you've carried a pack at altitude and you, so there's something about going through the journey and doing the work, you know. I guess we want to have things without doing the work in life. And discipline. I've heard the description that a definition of heaven and hell, and it's simply that hell is living immediately with the decisions that you've made, the poor decisions that you've made in your life, as opposed to heaven, which is the same, immediately living out those great decisions that you've made. So you can't get away without paying the piper. Everybody will reap exactly what they have sown. So yes, it can be hard. And I suppose the second point that I wanted to go into is the reason that I feel so many people find it hard to, you know, look after themselves or do the right things is probably ties in nicely with you guys do, but is around purpose. And I feel there are many, 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 many people that I see every day who they're not living with purpose, and they're very unaware of what they're, you know. I totally believe that we're all on this earth with a soul contract, we're all magnificent, and we all have something that we are here to do fundamentally that lights us up, makes us happy, is challenging, no doubt, but you know, is a wonderful path. Now, I think many people are so devoid of what they're actually here to do, such that they find themselves living in a way. I think if you're, if you have a North Star in the sky and you follow it and you know where you're going, you're much more likely to embrace the challenges along the way. Yes, you know, yes, today's hard, but I know that I'm working towards this.
Yeah.
If you don't have a North Star, you don't know what you're here to do. A, it's very easy to be distracted, but two, you find yourself delving into addictive behaviors, whether that's overeating, gambling, excessive alcohol, you know, not sleeping, you know, unsafe sexual practice, whatever it is. But the sort of the addictive behaviors are a product of a not following that North Star or that calling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100% agree with that. I feel like, especially in these times, that one of the key elements, especially that our clients are working on, is making sure that they have a focus on their vision, not getting, allowing themselves to get distracted by the noise out here. And we all do that at some level, right? I know I have, but there's so much noise out here. But when your vision is clear, when you have that North Star, as you call it, you can drown that out. You can have your ultimate goal, and therefore you create your challenges in accordance with that. And I think that's so important. So you're basically saying, Dave, if I'm paraphrasing correctly, that a part of having good health is being able to have that outcome, that goal, that vision, and being able to work towards something and be able to deal with the challenges that come with that.
Absolutely. Fundamentally, I don't think you can have perfect health with longevity if you're not living out your telos, your highest order. Yeah. If you're, it's just not compatible.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that needs any more explanation.
I think I 100% agree. I love that. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
So getting back to that question that we spoke about earlier, what are you seeing some of the ailments and treatments that are required going through and from the general public coming through your practice at the moment?
I mean, mental health, as you touched on, is so overrepresented. In fact, I have a slightly different view on mental health. I think it's often stigmatized, or there are the mentally well and they're there unwell mentally.
Right.
It's not like that. We're all just people with a culmination of our experiences, living out what's happening in our minds with the relevant social supports that we have. So the difference between yourself might be that you have a loving family, a home, and you're financially secure. They might be the only differences between you and somebody else who's on the rocks, on the ropes of suicide or, you know, disastrous mental health. So mental health is overrepresented, and I know from looking at the data that that's exponentially increasing with the current social climate. Isolation is a big thing. Obviously, if you're having, you know, lockdowns or social distancing, there's going to be the consequence of people becoming isolated. I think not just the elderly, but certainly there's been studies done before that show the effect of social isolation on health is enormous, you know, as big as a risk factor as vascular disease. Not having enough connection, I mean, we're social beings, and part of our fundamental basis of being alive is to connect. So if you take that away from somebody, it's absolutely no surprise that that can have a devastating effect on somebody. Mm. So lots of depression, Mitch, lots of anxiety, fear, you know, people just trying to conceptualize what's happening in the world, confusion about what to believe, what's in the media.
So just with that, how would you, I was going to ask you about the fear, because I think that's a big part. How do you combat that fear, that confusion for people with you, you know, taking a holistic approach, how do you deal with that? What do you recommend for people to do? You know, what are some tips that you would give people?
A big part of it is focusing on the self and grounding oneself in their own life. It's very easy to switch on the TV and be transported into another world that may not necessarily relate to the world that you're living in.
Yes.
On a local level. Now, before we finish down the track, I'd like to give a few tips that people can, somebody that's listening today can take away as far as building their own perfect health and instituting some practical things after this call. One of which would be give your TV away.
Oh my God. I love you.
if you flick on a box, which instantly transforms you to another part of the world where the message that you're hearing is be scared, fear, you know, sensationalism on some level, and all the things that sell within the media, that person's going to have a very hard time grounding themselves in the reality of, let's say, living in Perth and going to work, you know, getting loaded up, getting your consciousness hijacked by programming. So I guess one thing would be to A, give away your TV, but B, focus on what you're allowing into your consciousness and grounding yourself in your life. What is your mission? What are you here to do? Never mind, and I'm not saying you need to ignore everything, but you need to focus on what you can change at a local level, what you're here to do, and not get too distracted by everything else that's driving us from our equanimous center, polarized to the left or polarized to the right. Mm.
Yeah. I think anything that is polarizing in any way, left or right, is an immediate problem, but deep down is a lesson for people to wake up. The minute you smell that or see that, you need to switch it off, get it out of your consciousness, just get it out of the way. Mm-hmm. One of the things I do with the kids now, and I do myself, is I will often, just when I'm, you know, if I'm on the bike or I'm at the back or I'm in, because I live on a property, I'll stop and go, am I well right now? You know, breathe in, just walk out the back and just look around and take in a breath and ask yourself the question, am I well right now? Because all we have is right now. We only have right now. You know, many times, you know, through my whole career, I've said that fear is a future perception of a loss without a gain, a future perception that an event is going to occur that's going to harm you. And you haven't got that. You can't have one without the other. You can't have a pleasure without a pain, a good without a bad. And when we stop and we get into the moment of just appreciating what we have around us right now, our fresh air, our families, and that, you know, that's all you have. And if anything's going to interfere with that, you need to get it out of your life. If your television is going to interfere with that, your radio stations, your podcasts, what you're listening to is interfering with your homeostatic state, then get it out of your life because it's not of service to you. You know, and the deepest of service it could do, if you are keeping it in your life, would be to tell you to get the fucking thing out of your life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I guess it's how do you teach that way of filtering? I know that the work that you guys do and the work of other people like John DeMartini creating that lens where you look at the world with that filter and say, what's the good in the bad, what's the bad in the good, and coming out with a neutral, equanimous, grateful viewpoint. I think it's the sort of thing that everyone should really invest the time to learn or to try and come away with that grounding as far as applying that to the way that you see the world.
Yeah.
And in the absence of being able to learn that, as you say, creating gratitude for what you have, looking at what you have in your life rather than looking at what you don't have, and reminding yourself that it's magnificent and it's wonderful. And the other thing you touched on, which is an important thing that I like to talk about, is breathing. Now, another simple tip that people can do is learn to breathe properly. And it sounds silly because you'll never get taught this in conventional medicine. Nobody talks about breathing, but breathing is so fundamental to our health. Most people do little bird breaths from their upper chest very quickly, which is, as you would know, activates your sympathetic nervous system, your fight or flight, your cortisol, your adrenaline, your suppressing your immune system. Whereas if you breathe from your diaphragm or belly breathing, if you like, or some people call 4-4 breathing, or square breathing, where you have a very delayed exhale, you actually activate your parasympathetic nervous system, or your vagal nerve, which is your rest and digest, relaxation, which settles the mind. And any of the mystics or the spiritual teachers will tell you the significance between the breath and the mind.
Yeah.
So if you can learn to breathe deeply in times of stress or all the time, you're already putting yourself in a better frame to manage what's coming at you.
Beautiful. I love that.
It's funny. When years ago I used to do a technique with a woman called it was a type of breath work. It'll come to me in a minute. And she used to say to me, your connection to the universe happens in between your breath. So when you breathe in, stop that second. She said, your breath work is your human side. When you stop in that interval, that's when you're connecting to your spiritual side. And she would do breath work with me, and then she would say, okay, what are you seeing right now? She would get insights out of me as at that moment where that pause, you know, and then that exhale pause. It was actually really, really, really quite magical. It was the first time that I really understood the power of breath, you know.
I like that. Yeah, I really like that. So the holding on the pause, giving you some connection with spirit there.
Yeah.
I think it's a really easy thing to teach people. Let's say someone associates with the label of anxiety. If somebody is anxious and losing control of the moment, getting someone to ground themselves with breathing and just slow your breathing, have a very definitive exhale with a pause, there's no way you can't reduce your anxiety level. It has to come down. It's physiological.
Can I just touch on something you said there? I really love that. I agree with you, like that whole associating with the label of anxiety. But can you explain what you mean by that? Because some people would say, I have anxiety, and you're saying, no, it's a label. What do you mean by that? Explain that, please.
maybe I've opened a can of worms. We need to sometimes draw a line between over-medicalizing people and just coming up with practical tools or solutions to what somebody is experiencing. It's very easy to give somebody a label. Sometimes it can be very validating, and someone can say, I've battled with this for a long time. It's nice to have that label, or it gives us a language to be able to speak to. If I say to my colleague, this person has anxiety, this person has depression. But there is also, a scope for understanding that every person in their life has an element of anxiety, has an element of depression. And these things are driven by daily factors, but also subconscious things. So I would never say to somebody, oh, I live without anxiety or without depression or without mental health. Mm-hmm. I'm a human being, and I live with it all. I don't give myself a label. And sometimes labeling things can over-medicalize it, can remove, not sure if I'm explaining this well. It's irrelevant of what the therapeutic, if you want to give someone something that's going to help them, for example, breath work or a technique, do we need to give that person a label that they associate with, and they creates a victim mentality, or creates a crutch or an excuse, or not to say that these things are like that people make excuses, but
It doesn't mean I do agree. I do understand. It doesn't mean that they're not experiencing what something we would call, or somebody might call, anxiety. It doesn't mean that they're not experiencing it. But you're saying that when you put it into a label or a box, then you kind of limit yourself with, well, this is how I've heard it, limit yourself with what you can do, where, as opposed to saying, okay, you're experiencing X, Y, Z, let's try breath work, let's try this, rather than saying, if I chuck a label on it, then you can feel better about the fact that you can, you've got a name for this thing, or this thing has a, I don't know if I've explained it any better than you,
Dave. You have, absolutely. And I suppose it's about the advocacy and empowering that person. If somebody gives them, if someone is given a label and then says, this is what I have, there's nothing to be done, or this is what I have, the doctor has said it's that, the responsibilities with the doctor, rather than, you know, it's changing the level of empowerment. I would rather just work with somebody and say, you're having this issue, does it matter what we call it? Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. This is how we're going to manage it. Mm-hmm. These are the tools.
One of the things I've found over time is, you know, that whole concept of you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink, but you can make him thirsty, right? I do meet people that find illnesses so beneficial to them because they feel lonely. It gives them a label. It makes them feel important. It gives them a, I can now get around the world and say, I am like this because I have this. You know, and but I think, you know, the way I've always seen it through time is it's important to be able to let people know that there is another way to look at things. Sometimes I see it like the banking system. You know, you go into a bank, you've got the teller. The teller doesn't only communicates with the manager, right? But the manager communicates with their manager, which might be a branch manager. The branch manager communicates with the community manager. But the teller has no idea what the community manager knows or is telling, you know, the branch manager underneath them. They're only told what they're told at this level. So I sometimes see that with general practice is that, you know, people go in and they just – they get outframed by a GP, you know, and you know,
which brings me to a magnificent point, Mitch, which is about autonomy. And the paternalism that exists within medicine is a real challenge. Mm-hmm. When people come in and feel intimidated, or that their experience is not going to be validated, mm-hmm. no matter what you think about that person's experience on a science level or what's happening, that is the experience for that individual. If they come in and say, this is what's happening for me, if you don't validate that person's experience, yeah. or say, I understand what you're going through. If an Indigenous man comes to see me and his concept of health is around the dream time and, you know, the rainbow snake, or his concept of what causes disease is very foreign to mine, that doesn't change whether I think it's, you know, gout that he's got causing pain and that's my scientific explanation for it. It doesn't trump his belief system yeah. in what it is for him. So I need to understand his experience and work with him, not talk down to him, not yeah. lecture him, not intimidate him. So I have a vision of a world where people, it's a level playing field, you know, and this brings me back to the idea of quantum healing or being a quantum healer. The transfer of information is bi-directional. This man that comes to see me with his concept of health and the dream time is teaching me as much as I am giving him something back. It's a yeah. bi-directional flow of information. Mm-hmm. And we don't practice like that. Medicine mm-hmm. is very paternalistic, although it is changing. People come in, feel intimidated, feel that they're not validated. They're told how to live. They're told how to believe. And they're told that their concepts are wrong mm-hmm. because there's only one model that's accepted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can I touch on something? I don't know if you're up for talking about the impact of the pharmaceutical companies. Are you able to speak to that at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. But I might not say what you think I'm going to say.
No, whatever you say is fine.
In the sense that I'll try and give a balanced perspective around the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, we're not pharma bashers at all.
Which is often what you don't hear. I think I've heard you, Mitch, say before regard to Coca-Cola, and mm-hmm. If people want to have amazing, organically produced coconut water and healthy alternatives, the consumer needs to stop drinking Coke and send a message to Coca-Cola, who are simply a conglomerate who are there to make money and to offer a service. You send a message that they cannot refuse, where you say, we're not willing to drink that anymore.
Yeah.
We want this. And they're not going to, what's the saying? A creature's not going to cut off its own life supply or its existence. It's not going to
for existence.
Right. So the industry has to change. I suppose on some level, pharmaceuticals are the same. I could stand here and I could bash pharma and say that all of the terrible things that occur and the interface between consumerism and profits meeting health, and the fact that health is exploited at the junction of profit, which you can hear that point of view anywhere, and some of that is definitely valid, no question about it. But what do we accept on a personal level? What are you willing to put in your mouth to solve the problems that you have in your life that you've created? Mm. So a big thing for me is to try and take 100% responsibility for my life. And that's easy to say, but very hard to do. So if I refuse to take pharmaceutical medications and I say, I'm going to put nourishing, organic, healthy, plant-based food into my body. I'm going to put healthy products onto my skin. I'm going to reject everything that's full of chemicals and poisons and create my own health. Then I'm sending a very strong message back to somebody that's trying to offer me a pill for every ill, saying I'm not willing to take that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a two-way street. I'd like that there are people that need to be on medications because they've denied the laws of some people, you know, there's genetics and there's other things, but there are a lot of people that are living out the consequences of their poor choices and then trying to pacify that with the pills that are being offered out, you know, often very willy-nilly by practitioners. So
I love that, Dave. I think personal responsibility is the message based on everything you've said today. It's like, it's about having your own body autonomy, having personal responsibility, because as I always say, responsibility is the greatest form of empowerment. Mm-hmm. If you want to be powerful, if you want to take control of your own health, then you have to be responsible for it, and nobody else can do that for you.
And so the advocacy goes two ways. I'd love a patient that comes in and questions the practitioner. We need to put more pressure onto our GPs, onto our specialists, and say, why are you giving this to me? How else can I do this? There is the responsibility. I don't want to make out like the person is the only one that has a role to change in this, but we need to push back on our practitioners and say, you're giving me an antibiotic today. Do I have a bacterial infection? If not, why are you giving me an antibiotic?
You're
giving me this medication. What are the side effects of it? We're very passive. We're very accepting. We have a lot of trust in an industry that has a lot of good people, but has definitely met a junction with big industry and big money and big profits. Mm-hmm. So we need to push back on our GPs and our specialists. We need people to come in and ask questions and to say, can you please explain the side effects of this to me? Mm-hmm. Okay, I understand that this medication may work. Can you tell me more about it? Mm-hmm. Is this a long-term medication? Is this something I just need to take for a short time? Can you teach me the skills that I need so I don't need to have this tablet in the long term?
Yeah.
Okay, my blood pressure is high. I'll be happy to take this pill for 6 months or a year, but can you teach me how to eat healthy so that I can lose the weight, so that I can de-stress, so that I can prioritize my life?
So it's...
Love that.
Yeah.
Love it. So you said that you wanted to tell us, or you wanted to give some tips on building perfect health. So you've given us a couple of points. So throwing the TV away is one. Breathing was another one. What else? Have you got any other tips so that people can actually take some action? What else would you recommend?
I suppose I'll try and keep them practical, but an enormous one is people need to prioritize their health. Mm-hmm. It sounds so simple, but it's not, it's not always done. People need to, people need, I'm telling people how to advise. I think it's helpful if people try and change their ideas, you know, the new car, the consumerism, the new stuff isn't important as you think it is. What is important is the avatar body that you have and looking after it. If you want to get 100 years out of a body, you need to prioritize looking after it, and a mind and a spirit, you need to practice grounding processes. Now, I could sit here and talk about meditation for hours, but if people can adopt some form of meditative practice, which doesn't need to be in a cave in the Himalayas, it can be, let's say, downhill mountain biking and being very focused in the moment when you're riding through very narrow trails. Focusing on being purely in the moment of any activity is a meditative process. So, you know, adopting some kind of cognitive and mindful technique that is done on a daily basis, even for a very short period of time, 5 minutes, is enormously grounding.
Yeah.
We've already been over it, probably done it to death, but people should be very strict about what they put in their mouths.
Yeah.
They should be very strict about what they put in their skin.
Yeah.
People need to ask questions, you know, advocate for themselves and to ask, to be curious and not just, you know, accept what they're being spoon fed, to say, you know, is this right? Can you explain this to me? There's a whole, you know, we could talk about self-love and criticism. I think people need to try and stop criticizing themselves, which is probably not in itself a practical tool because there's so many steps in how to do that. But being cultivating an awareness of your thoughts and how you speak to yourself every day, standing in front of the mirror and saying I love you to yourself, if you can't do it, start practicing learning to operate with a level of self-love on a daily basis. You know, we talked about purpose, which is not a practical tip, but starting to ask the right questions. Why am I here? What am I here to do that's not working a 9-to-5 job that you hate? We talked about being strict about what you let into your consciousness. I think that's absolutely fundamental. Laughing a lot, pursuing things that I love, stand-up comedy, so I quite love putting on stand-up comedy, even for 5 minutes, just to let somebody make me laugh. That's very good for our health.
I was heading down south with the lads the other day, and we had some stand-up on, and we were, if you get a chance, listen to Lee Evans. He's the guy that was in something about Mary. You know who Lee Evans is?
I know him, yeah, he's good.
God, he is so funny. He was doing a skit on GPSs in cars, it's so sexy, you know. You listen to her, even though she's telling you, you know, if your wife's in the car, she says, go left. You think, oh, you know, go left.
Not doing that. Yeah,
but when the GPS comes on, she goes, and 10 minutes, go left. And the skit was absolutely hilarious, mate.
Yeah,
anyway, and I couldn't agree more with you about the mountain biking, mate. Mountain biking made a huge difference. I tell you what someone did say to me, though, about the stress that it puts on your body getting, you know, because you think, somebody said to me, look, if you're using mountain biking to de-stress, when you're heading downhill in the flow state, for sure, absolutely. But when you're stressing your body heading uphill, you have to be careful what you're doing. Do you know what I mean? You have to...
Because so there's physical stress.
There's physical stress and mental stress, right. Even at the gym.
Absolutely. So again, it's a balance. And, you know, I hope that part of my overwhelming message from this podcast is that we need to live in balance across all facets of life. Now, I encourage people to do a movement that they enjoy. It doesn't matter what it is, but if you hate running and you tell yourself, I'm going to run 3 times a week, you're not going to do it. So if you can find an activity, whether it's dancing, whether it's sex, whether it's downhill mountain biking, yoga, anything, do something that you love, because it makes it very easy to stick with that activity.
Yeah. 100%.
My goodness.
That's been a great podcast.
That was so good. I have a feeling that so many people listening to this are going to fall in love with you, Dave.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.